welcome to the Frontside Podcast, the place where we talk about user interfaces and everything that you need to know to build them right. My name is Charles Lowell, a developer here at Frontside, and in this first episode of this new season, what we're going to be talking about is literally what we're going to be talking about. That is, in this episode, we'll be talking about all the things that we're going to be talking about in the episodes to come. And what that thing that is that we're going to be talking about is building UI platforms for you and your company. And so joining me today in this conversation are Taras Mankowski and Jeffrey Cherawati.
It's an interesting topic. I think for a lot of people that be listening to this podcast, if they are in the Ember community, I feel like a lot of people in the Ember community have been thinking about platforms for a long time. They might not have been thinking about what they're doing is thinking about platforms, but the activity of building Ember framework that I think a lot of the people in the Ember community have been kind of part of is building the foundation for these platforms. But the experience that I had as personally when, you know, shifting from working with Ember to working with React, you kind of realize that these conversations that are had in Ember community are not necessarily happening in the same way in React projects. And then seeing Angular emerge as a platform, you know, and them really focusing on platforms has been really interesting. And I think that for me is what got me thinking about this. And I think we've actually had a lot of experiences recently where we've seen this play out in projects, like one project after another.
Right. And I think that this is, you know, it's important to point out that this is a problem that every single person in every single one of those communities you just mentioned, and more, pretty much every community out there, if you're building an application of note, this is a problem that you're dealing with. And there are actually a lot of different strategies, you know, some more whole cloth and some more, you know, kind of piecemeal solutions out there. But it is something that every single community is dealing with in its own different way. And so it's important that we need to identify that and talk about it at that meta level, as this is a set of shared problems in the entire, not just JavaScript community, but really anyone who's going to be developing a UI, but clearly with a focus on web UIs.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I find it fascinating that the conversations about web UIs, because we've been having these conversations with our clients, and the scope of the conversation is actually quite broad, because you start off from the perspective of the user who's interacting with the system, and you go all the way down to, I think, the point where the conversation tends to kind of has been stopping for us so far has been kind of hitting the point of the payload coming back from the server. Like, so you have this API that's designed to provide data to the front end. But there's actually quite a lot of things going on between the user and the server. For those who are familiar with big frameworks like Ember and Angular, and Ember has some things that are really interesting about it even more so. But, you know, you kind of take it for granted that all these pieces of architecture are just kind of there for you. You know, so you've got the data layer with Ember data. It comes with a format for serializing, deserializing payloads using JSON API. You know, your state management practices are partially built into the framework. You have routing coming right out of the box. You have an upgrade path. So all these things are now available with both Ember and Angular. But these things in many ways are kind of like pre-thought for you. So when you start to use them, they're just like there. But when you use other things, like I had this experience with Vue where someone was asking me a question about like, oh, how would you handle this kind of, you know, data fetching scenario with Vue? And I'm like, well, you could use Ember concurrency. And I'm like, well, no, you can't use Ember concurrency in Vue, right? So you actually, when you start to see these kind of like a different community trying to tackle an architectural aspect of a platform that they don't have, like they actually just, it hasn't been constructed yet, you start to realize like how many things in some places are there for you when there aren't in other places. And it can be even more, like it can go even further when you start thinking about React, where in many ways the frameworks, the tool is kind of like destructured into pieces. And then you have to, like, for your organization, you have to assemble these tools into one framework that you are then using for, you know, to build large applications.
Right. I think the part of the value of having this conversation is to give a realistic frame of reference for how to compare different tools, different technologies, and different techniques, and kind of show how they slot into, you know, a cohesive platform. You know, we're going to be using that word a lot. So it doesn't really make sense to, for example, to compare React with Angular, because the scope of the problem that one is taking on is categorically different than the scope of the other. So React is a view and rendering library, which is a key component of a greater platform. So the question is, and Angular, for example, has its own view layer. So it also has that one key pillar of the platform, but it also has a bunch of other things that come along with it that aren't present if you're just using React. And so, you know, there needs to be a conversation about what are the things that you need? What are the things that you need? And I think that different communities and different companies and different individuals, you know, all have a different collection of things that they use and provide a different fraction of that scope. You know, what is that scope? That's what this conversation is all about. And I think that, you know, if there's anything that I hope that folks gain, you know, by listening to this podcast over the next year, is coming away with a clear understanding of what it is that they're going to be up against, what it is that they're going to be up against really, and come away with some thoughtful discussion on how to interact with these problems, how to grapple with them, and in an ideal scenario, either participate or, you know, suggest folks who can participate in the conversation, because that's really what it is. It's not, we don't have all the answers, right? But we want to collectively explore the solution space.
To put a little bit more framing and scope around this conversation, is a big part of the reason why this is emergent and so important is because of the idea of state in your UI, right? Mm-hmm. And that's mm-hmm. when companies and organizations have built applications in the past for the web, you're using something like Ruby on Rails.
Yeah, it's been an outgrowth of your server, really.
Ye olde Zen framework. Yeah, you're using yeah. those types of platforms and frameworks.
It was a polyp on your API.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And really the emergence of single page JavaScript applications, and not just in JavaScript, but in native, you know, iOS and Android applications, and the emergence of that as a critical part of people's business really changed the way we think about UI and the way we need to build these types of applications. And so that kind of provides some scope that ties together all these different things. We're really talking about stateful UI applications, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. UI applications that have every iota of complexity as, you know, the desktop apps of yore, or the desktop apps of today, I suppose. So I think that's actually, that's a great point. Let's jump into it. So I guess for starters is, obviously this is something that we're very, very excited to talk about, but maybe it would do to provide a little bit of historical context as to why we think this is so important. Why are we talking about this now? Why do we feel that this conversation is so important to have?
I think it's important because it's really helpful to understand when we're thinking about setting out to do something, like we're thinking about building applications, especially when we know there's going to be a lot of people contributing to these applications. I think it's really helpful to know what you're up against. And we see this show itself in different ways. One of the things that I think is funny is that even if you think of a framework like Angular, which actually comes with a lot of the pieces that you need to build a comprehensive platform, even in that context, I heard Ben Lesh tweet that observables is not an architecture. You still need to build an architecture for your applications. If you have a framework that gives you a lot of pieces to build your platform, you're still kind of not done. There's still a lot of pieces to figure out how, for example, your data layer is going to work with your applications. What conventions are you going to provide to your developers for how they're going to use data fetching? Are you going to be using JSON API? Or are you going to be using GraphQL? You know, are you going to be using Redux to stitch your components together? Are you going to use, you're passing data through props? Like, there's a lot of
You're going to need a design system, right? You're going to have a suite of components that give a consistent look and feel, and they have to be thoughtfully considered so that they work in a multiplicity of layouts and devices and are accessible. And, you know, you've got to think about things like how you're going to handle internationalization, things like that. You know, almost every application winds up there, at least at some level. But even in those that don't, you're going to have that in place. But that's not something you think about as, you know, being a core thing that underpins your code or your application. That's a, you know, there are things that are totally non-code related that transcend framework that are absolutely key supporting pieces of your platform.
I think that's one of the challenges is that you actually, like, you can actually get some of these pieces right. And then if you either overlook or you get a few pieces wrong, and it can really put a downer on your entire experience of building with the framework. So you can kind of see that, for example, like, I think accessibility is a really good example of that. Like, if you don't, because a lot of companies, most companies don't have people that developers that need to rely on accessibility devices. So they're not thinking about accessibility as a primary concern, like, very early on. What that leads to is having your, for example, your routing system and your components designed in such a way that works until you start testing them for accessibility, and then you realize it's actually not accessible, and now you need to go back and undo a lot of the work that you did or redo a lot of the work that you did to accommodate for accessibility. But unfortunately, some things with single page applications are actually really difficult to retrofit, and accessibility is one of those things. Mm-hmm. And those kind of things start to adapt, especially in like very high pressure environments where you have a train of features that need to be delivered, and there's very little time to, like, go back and redo things. I think especially in those kind of environments, it's really like if the team that's building the patterns that are going to be used to build a large application, if they're not thinking about some of these key features, you know, they could actually create a scenario where it's really difficult to undo some of that architectural missing pieces.
Right. And you don't know. So, you know, to quote my favorite Donald Rumsfeld quote, it's the things that you don't know that you don't know that are the most dangerous, because you have no way of estimating the price. So, you know, accessibility is a great example of that. What if you say, well, this is going, if you don't tackle this now, this is going to cost you $600,000 in a year to do. And, you know, you might say, okay, that's an acceptable price for me. You know, it's going to cost a significant fraction. I might have to pay 50% over the original development cost or something like that. But if you don't know that that's the case, and then all of a sudden that cost shows up on your doorstep, that could be, and you're in a situation where you absolutely have to pay it. That's something that we've seen before. That can put you in, you know, a serious crisis that just appeared out of nowhere. Obviously, you want to avert crises. And then the, you know, next best kind of crisis is a looming crisis. I mean, no one wants that. But then, you know, the one that doesn't loom, but just kind of like shows up like an earthquake. Those are kind of things that can actually end businesses.
Yeah, so there's a lot on the line, I think, in these projects. I think this is more so, I think one of the reasons why these conversations are really important is that for many people, we only really get one chance to do it right. Because of the scale, like if you have 100 developers, or even if you have 15 developers working on a project, like, and if you have like a lot of features that you need to build, making those mistakes can be really, really challenging. And it adds up into a scenario where developers get unhappy. You know, you start to lose people that have gained that experience, you know, and it can kind of snowball into a scenario that is not great. And these things can add up in very predictable ways. Like, you know, if you don't have good testing story early on, it's quite likely that you're going to start introducing regressions. It's going to cause your business team to start to put pressure on the QA department to do more QA, which is going to increase QA time, which is going to make it harder for you to release features, and it just like adds up and adds up and adds up until 2 years later, you're like, this is not what we set out to build. This is not what we wanted to do. But unfortunately, at that point, it's kind of too late. And so I think these conversations, I'm hoping, is going to provide some materials that people can use to consider some of these topics. Because unfortunately, not every team has enough experienced developers who have built platforms before that they can have these conversations with.
The classic way around this problem is just to have someone very experienced on the team who has this map in their head. They're kind of a wayfinder that can, you know, navigate through the bay because they know where all the rocks are. But not everybody has that.
Yeah, right? And even when they have that, you want to lean on the shared experiences mm-hmm. of as many people as possible, right?
Right.
And have us all rowing in the same direction as a community.
Mm-hmm. And that can be, right, that actually relying on individual people with deep experience, it's non-redundant. It's fragile because there's a bottleneck.
I was going to go with hubris.
Yeah, I think one of the things that I find really fascinating is that people, and this is something I've learned recently, especially when I was working with India, is that people are so persistent and so hardworking and so dedicated. So people in many ways, like if you have a great team, you put a challenge in front of them and they will, you know, buckle down and try to get it done. And they will go to Google and they'll type in things into Google and get information, you know, and they will use that to architect some pieces. But I think what's really tricky is that it can be really difficult to tell what is the context for some of the resources that are available online. And there's not a lot of, I think one of the hard, difficult things about these kind of conversations is that these things are difficult to write about. They're, I think, almost easier to talk about because there's so much context that needs to be discussed that it by the time that you finish writing the context, you already have a blog post and you haven't even gotten to your content. And so I think that creating, you know, having more resources around information that is really kind of big and architectural, but also gets very granular, can be really helpful even for teams that have, you know, some experience. Like, I think having these kind of conversations that stitch things together could be really helpful in general.
So we've touched on a bunch of things that we think comprise a platform. Let's get specific. Maybe not an exhaustive list, but, you know, what are some of the things we just know that if you're building a stateful application right now, you're starting afresh, what are the kind of things that you really you ought to be grappling with from the get-go?
I'm going to start with a router.
That is actually so true. A good router, I mean, it really is the skeleton of your application. And not all routers are created equal. What a router exactly should do for you, I guess there are a lot of different takes on it. I certainly, having used now a bunch of different routers, I've been using the concept of routers for many, many, many years. I see them as absolutely critical, kind of the spine of your application, if you will.
I guess the next one from the router would be the data layer. Like, how are you fetching data from the server? What are the attributes of a good data layer that will actually work well for a large application? I think that's mm-hmm. a really important topic.
Right. Right. It's super important because we've seen, I mean, it is actually extraordinarily difficult to get right. We've seen the difficulties, and I don't actually think there are any perfect solutions.
There are, I think, a few attributes that these tools need to have, and I think talking about what those attributes are, I think just having those attributes in your data layer can be really helpful. So I think mm-hmm. just, you know, talking about those in the future, I think is going to be a good topic for conversation.
Yeah. I think if I can contribute one, having the build tooling, I'm going to lump deployment process in there are absolutely just, it's been my experience over my entire career that your effectiveness in being able to build and deploy easily and having flexibility and power there is just one of the key indicators of will the project be successful. Because it's something that everything touches in, and not, you know, it's your production system relies on it, and every single developer who's working, anyone who wants to actually get the source code and use it, is going to be relying on it. And so having that be as robust as possible is something that no one thinks about, but is of huge importance. I mean, it's a hard dependency on success.
I think testing could get lumped into that for mm-hmm. sure, too. It usually gets thought about a little bit more than how am I going to deploy this? But it's a critical piece of that, right?
Yeah, I think testing is absolutely, you know, I think it sits in its own kind of vertical in the platform. It is a, you know, one of the key supporting structures, a buttress, if you will. Maybe not like one of the biggest. I mean, you know, I'm speaking with hyperbole here. Everything's the biggest, everything's the greatest. But yeah, testing is huge. Like, what is your testing strategy?
And getting it right, like, it could be extraordinarily a great experience. Difficult. Mm-hmm. It's difficult, and when you get it right, like, people love it, developers love it, it's useful, it adds up really well. And if you get it wrong, people hate it, it's not useful, it's just like becomes a burden. So right. it really is one of those things that that has a significant net effect, but it requires actually having a point of reference and saying like, actually that is a good one, you know, and saying like, what is the attributes of a good testing infrastructure?
Yeah. It can be bedrock or it can be a sinkhole that can either, maintain you and uplift you or drag you down.
And that I think touches really well into the, or kind of rolls well into the next one, which would be like just collaboration. Cause I think it's very easy for people to either take it for granted or not realize that there are collaboration practices around like how to use Git, how do you use, what is your kind of pull request process? Like those things can.
So what are your documentation practices?
Documentation practices, being able to, even running, it could be as simple as seeing the check mark beside each commit could be a tool to be used when you're trying to figure out when things stop working. And like that is that little nuance, that collaboration can really kind of bring things together. And if you don't have it, it can delay things in a very significant way. So I think collaboration is another part of
right. I think piece. I think it's I particularly like that one because that's something that's very important to the way that we work. And I think that people, the problem is that developers work with code. And so it's a classic example of, if what you have is code, then everything looks like, I don't know, what's the equivalent of a nail in code, a code nail. Basically, I'm trying to draw the analogy of if all you have is a hammer, then everything starts to look like a nail. You're basically your solution space is confined by the tool that you have. And, when it comes to your collaboration and how you collaborate, either through looking at the check marks in Git, through leaving clues throughout the code by having good commit messages and good commit hygiene, how you interact with people, having a welcoming and open environment and being kind to people in your interactions with them on the project. These are things that have nothing to do with code, and yet they're actually, for us, we've seen large contributors to, cost and success and a general feeling of winning on a project. So yeah, that is a perfect segue to talk about the collaboration that we hope to unlock around this particular topic.
I think one thing I'd really love to see is we're going to be inviting people to join this conversation on the podcast, but I would also love to see people reach out to us to talk. Like if you have specific experience, like if you built a platform or you oversaw development of a large platform, we would love to talk to you, because especially if you have like lessons learned or you have pains that you've experienced, those are really good conversations to have, because one thing, it shows that this problem is universal, but also it's a good foundation for us to talk about, some of the mitigating factors that could be used. So if you're building something or you build something, we'd love to talk to you, reach out to us via Twitter or by email, and we would love to have you on the podcast.
Yeah, and if you know somebody who, when you hear, oh my goodness, routing, or oh my goodness, internationalization, or oh my goodness, design systems or accessibility, this person that I know has got to be a part of this conversation. They're a huge resource for me. Please, let us know. We'd love to have them on the podcast to talk about these things.
So sometimes we'll get really specific and we'll talk about some of these kind of pillars of frameworks. And sometimes we will still talk in the very generic like we are today and talking to some people who have specifically built platforms and what their kind of views on the situation are and successes they've had and failures they've run into and how we can all learn from those.
Mm-hmm. That's the big picture. That's the arc of the story that we're going to be trying to develop over the next months and really on throughout the year. So I hope everybody joins us for the ride. I think it's going to be a fun one. Well, thank you for listening. If you or someone you know has something to say about building user interfaces that simply must be heard, please get in touch with us. We can be found on Twitter at @thefrontside or over just plain old email at contact@frontside.io. Thanks, and see you next time.